What up, people? How are you doing? Welcome to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show. Before we start this show today, I got a shout out to one of our sponsors that keeps this show coming to you every single week free of charge. I know you like free. I know. I like free too. All podcasts are free, and it's because of people like Audrey Jean from Weight Management. Hey, you want to lose weight for the upcoming spring break? Are you going to be in South by Southwest in Austin, Texas like I am? Maybe you're going to Cabo San Lucas. Maybe you're going to Mexico. Is that the same place? I don't know. But you want to look in shape. You want to look fit. You want to look sexy, all right? I know you want to look sexy. So go check out my girl Audrey Jean. Weight Management at www.. That was too many W's it sounded like. Let me try that again. www.90dayfx.com. Same on Facebook, so go over to www.90dayfx.com.
Oh, Brian,
what have you done now? You're talking to the road expert!
Woo!
Diamond ring wearing.
Woo!
Kiss stealing.
Woo!
Wheeling dealing.
Woo!
Limousine riding.
Woo!
Jet flying.
Woo!
Suck it up, look up.
Woo!
And I'm having a hard time.
Holy Alligator style.
Now give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo!
This is the Brad Gilmore Show on demand or demand.
What's going on, y'all? This is DJ DMD, and y'all are checking out Brad Gilmore Show on demand right here.
What's going down is your homie Dope Easy, the Southeast Beast, and make sure you tune in to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show.
Now can you dig that, sucker?
On demand.
On demand.
And now, here's your host, Brad Gilmore.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. We have a great episode for you today, episode 91 overall of the Brad Gilmore Show. We're closing in on the 100th episode of the podcast, people. I know we had the 100th episode overall of the Brad Gilmore Show back with episode, I don't even remember what episode it was. I think it was episode 15 or something like that. One of these episodes, Kurt Cobain is Killer Callion, DDP. Anyways, welcome to the show. We have a great show for you today. So much to talk about, but there's so much on this one episode of the Brad Gilmore Show that it's gonna have to be a short intro today, people. All right. I got to talk about a couple things before we get into our interviews today, and we have many interviews today, three overall, one consisting of an interview. He was on the show last week, but he's on the show again this week, an interview with the one and only, the man, Kyle Hubbard, has made his return to hip-hop. He's back in the booth. He's ripping the pages out of his notebook, if you will, and we're going to be talking to K-Hub and debuting exclusively right here on the Brad Gilmore Show, debuting his brand new song, Rip the Page, featuring Chuck North, produced by DJ Kaz, and you will hear that today exclusively on the Brad Gilmore Show. Also coming up, we have interviews with one of the main events going into February 21st, the Final Heat, a special event from Reality of Wrestling. One of the big main events is a steel cage match for the Reality of Wrestling Television Championship, seeing the challenger, the Lone Ranger of the Row, Brian Keith, the Bounty Hunter, going against the champion, Ruthless Ryan Davidson. This is their third championship match. Brian Keith coming so close, yet no cigar, and it will be in a cage match, steel cage match, third in Reality of Wrestling history. It should be an awesome, awesome event, an awesome match, and we're going to be talking to both participants in that match today here on the show. A couple things, though, I want to address. First off, coming off last night was Monday Night Raw. They got frozen. They got blizzard out. They got blizzed out. They had to do a show live from WWE headquarters. Shout out to Booker T, who did his thing on the show. And it was very interesting coming off the Royal Rumble, which Roman Reigns did win. If you read my dayinadream.com article, he was one of my picks. I said the long-rumored man to face Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship at the Royal Rumble, and it was Roman Reigns. He is the 2015 Royal Rumble winner. A lot of people have something to say about that. You know, it was predictable. I'll talk more about it, though, on a future episode of the Brad Gilmore Show. A couple other things I want to get into, though. Heated conversations with the aforementioned Booker T will be every Saturday night at a at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Sports Radio 610. I just had to give a shout-out to Booker. Plug the show. Make sure y'all go listen to it. Book's talking UFC, WWE, NFL, and all kinds of stuff over there on Heated Conversations. Over on Sports Radio 610 AM here in Houston, 7 p.m. every Saturday night. Shout out to DDP, who is also in the Royal Rumble. DDP Yoga. I'm going to get him back on this show here very soon. We're going to talk about that Royal Rumble. And also, on a lighter, much deeper note, I got a call last week that last week's guest of the show, Dobeezy, was attacked during a attempted home invasion. I don't want to get into the specifics. I'm sure if you're listening to the show, you already know what went down. But I just want to send my thoughts and prayers to Dobeezy and his family. I know they're going through something real hard right now, and it's just sad. Sometimes tragedy strikes at times we least expect it. But Dobeezy knows the whole city of Houston loves him. We believe in him. He will be the next big star. He is a star in my eyes already. And I appreciate everything you've ever said and done for me, Doe. And all the times you've come to the show. You know, you're one of my favorite people in this industry. And I'm really glad you're still here, you know, being the Southeast Beast. Even though I'm the real Southeast Beast, Doe, we still got that beef, brother. But in all seriousness, man, Footprints on the Moon's amazing. I'm From Texas video debuted on MTV this week. I know he's expecting a brand new baby here in the next few days, a baby girl. So shout out to you, Dobeezy, man. I just want to tell you I love you, bro, and hope everything's well, man, and we'll talk soon. All right, but with that being said, let's play some Dobeezy here for the morning music mix, and then we're going to be back with my interview with Kyle Hubbard, followed by the debut of his new song, Rip the Page, featuring Truck North, I'm sorry, produced by DJ Kaz, and then right after that, we're going to be back-to-back interviews. First off, Brian Keith, the challenger, and then the champion, Ruthless Ryan Davidson. It's going to be a Brad Gilmore show to remember. So stay tuned and keep it locked to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show. GMP, on demand.
Yeah. From 610 up to 59, I stay getting it in because I'm on the grind when I'm cruising. From 288 back to 45, when I drop the top, you know it's going down when I'm cruising. From 290 up to I-10, you know I'm getting chose when I slide in when I'm cruising. When I'm cruising, when I'm cruising, when I'm cruising, when I'm cruising. Eldorado, my boulevard. Talk down and get a bullet scarred. No catfish, I'm with a bad bitch. You're like a fishing rod, I'll pull you broad. Coming down and I'm looking good. You think I'm chopping trees the way I rip the wood? I'm too Houston to ever be Hollywood. That's why they never surprised when I hit the hood. Choppers chopping, boppers bopping. I see you haters on your job with your pocket watching. Mad that your bitch can't stop and watching when I'm at the Galleria with my partner shopping. Cause every day I ball like I play for Utah. If you broke, then of course you wanna drop the topic. But I go and get the mail like I'm Karl Malone and keep an eye on my side like my Glock was Stockton. If I'm posted up, you know I'm rolling up. And if I'm riding right, you know I'm smoking something. I'm looking clean, my bitch cooking. Clean and pump a Memphis ain't like it's Robitus. I ride around on my side of town doing 90 miles about 4 grand with the trunk popping like a Coke can. Screaming fuck the laws, I feel no man when I'm cruising. Yeah. From 610 up to 59, I stay getting it in cause I'm on the grind when I'm cruising. From 288 back to 45, when I drop the top, you know it's going down when I'm cruising. From 290 up to I-10, you know I'm getting chose when I slide in when I'm cruising.
Cruise.
When I'm cruising, when I'm cruising, when I'm cruising.
Cruising through Houston, top down, hoes choosing. Can't stop, keep moving. I'm winning, why they losing? Looking like a star in that double R. Doing RJ 12s like a porno star. She don't want me, she wanna fuck my car. I'ma fuck her first, then pass the broad. Cash stop, fresh off the lot. Something foreign by the quarter meal. Home boss, don't need a deal to hit that boy gripping wood wheel. Made it out the hood, guess how that feel? Still shining, guess how that feel? Swinging rolls, guess how that feel? And I ain't changed, I'm still real. Young OG, but I still kill. Hit the club, bunch of dimes with me. Feeling like I run the city, live a boss life, dope easy with me. You know, we keep one pulled up, and I keep one rolled up. 6'10 back to 45, we got the whole city sold up. Cruise, cruise.
Yeah,
from 16 up to 59, I stay getting it in, cause I'm on the grind when I'm cruising. From 288 back to 45, when I drop the top, you know it's going down when I'm cruising. From 290 up to I-10, you know I'm getting chose when I slide in when I'm cruising.
Bitch, don't kill my vibe
when I cruise in a taxi. Two strings hanging like a saggy titty. On the grind for a meal like the cat from Philly. When you pay, getting laid is everyday thing. Boy, you broke hoes, accidentally. But I ain't never been the type to see a chicken trick. I be the type to leave a bitch if I act silly. I'm a West timer in some form. About to call some form when I'm done recording. She said she got a man, but he dumb and boring. I never wanna go home till I'm done exploring. So I slide in, slide out. Then I dive so deep, I gotta climb out. I let her choose the mode to make her lose control. Then hit the cruise control before you find out. Cause I be cruising, baby, when I ride out. Living the life you rappers lying about. I grind hard with no timeouts. I flow crazy like Amy in a wine. House. I rumble in the jungle when the line's out. We cutty haters like shade when the shine's out. But you gon' need another curtain for this lighthouse. So if I'm in the car, I'm taking flights out. You know I'm cruising. Nigga,
yeah.
From 16 up to 59, I stay getting it in. Cause I'm on the grind when I'm cruising. From 288 back to 45, when I drop the top, you know it's going down when I'm cruising. From 290 up to I-10, you know I'm getting chose when I slide in when I'm cruising. When I cruise, when I cruise, when I cruise, when I cruise.
GMB,
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 GMB.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Brad Gilmore Show. And I'm telling you, this guy is setting records. He's appeared not only on the first episode of the show, not on every incarnation of the Brad Gilmore Show, not on the first episode, not only on the first episode of the relaunch, but now 2 weeks in a row, Kyle Hubbard is here. How are you again this week, my brother?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Bradwell?
I am good. I still appreciate that you call me Bradwell. I really
I'm never going to stop calling you Bradwell.
Bradwell, Brad Wellington. I do like
Brad Wellington is a little formal. I like to keep it Bradwell in conversation.
Well, dude, last week you were on the show because we were talking about Royal Rumble. We were talking about wrestling. And this week, though, it's a little bit of a change. Now, I know Kyle Hubbard. I met Kyle Hubbard in the underground hip-hop scene in Houston, Texas, maybe in the years like 2010, maybe it was
2010. Yeah,
and,
that was it.
Yeah, man, and I remember I think I officially met you at like Turning Heads at Mango's, or it was or either there or Warehouse Live for like a one mic.
One
showcase.
Mic. We met at one mic.
Okay.
Yeah, Hash Brown put that on. Yeah, 2010, yeah. June, I think.
I think it was June or July. Yeah, June or July of 2010 is when Kyle Hubbard and I first met. And I think we had an instant bonding just because we were white and in the hip hop scene a little bit, just because we're like the only guys there.
Hey, you're white. I'm white too. BFFs, perfect.
but that was not our only thing that we had in common. But it was nice. It was something that brought us together, I think, originally. Which kind of is funny because I was listening to the radio station Hot 97, legendary hip hop station today in New York, and they were talking about like Iggy Azalea is going off on Ebro, who's like the program director / morning show host over there for all kinds of inflammation. You know, she was just going off on him because she said that she changed hip hop forever or something like that.
Right? Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if that was the direct thing that she said, but it was something to that effect, or that she opened the doors for everybody to get in on hip hop, or it was something like that, right?
What?
It was It was something like that, and it was, you know, she said something to Ebro about I'm the only you know, Australian white woman that's ever got a number one hit record in the United States or whatever. And
well, that's true. That's a good point.
That is a good point. And then Ebro said, he goes, but I'm tired of these. It was actually pretty funny. He was like, I'm tired of these people saying like all these things of like, he goes, a movie comes out and it's like the highest grossing number one comedy that was released on a Sunday in June where Friday had a full moon the day before and it broke all kinds of, you know.
Yeah, right, right, yeah.
And I'm like, I do understand that. But how do you feel? Iggy Azalea has been getting a lot of heat, I think, partially for being a white rapper, and I hate that term. I know you probably hate it too. But what is your stance on Iggy Azalea?
Well, yeah, like you said, I think the term white rapper is extremely played out. There's been a plethora of talented white dudes to make a mark on the game. But Iggy Azalea, my problem with her is like the black scent that she puts on. Like when you hear her speak and you hear her rap, that's so completely different that it's like almost impossible to take her as a legitimate artist.
But do you think some people could say the same thing about you?
Well, I mean, it seems to me that you think that.
No, I'm just saying, like, I mean, you do have a different speaking voice than a rapping voice, but and so do I, but I think that's just like a general thing, except unless you're Jay-Z and you're just able to talk like an amazing man all the time.
No, you're right, and that's a good point. Okay, I guess there's something about rappers, and this is also true of professional wrestlers, which is something that I can bring up on this show.
Yes.
But, like, there's things about the successful people. It is themselves, but it's themselves turned up to a certain degree, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So I think that's true of both you and I. You know, I'm not as pissed off in my everyday life as I am in my songs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but there's very much, it's very much an extension of the person that I actually am. You know, that is really me. It's just the parts of me that are extreme. Now, Iggy Azalea, to me, there's no parts of her in her music. To me, her music is a completely different person. And that character isn't derived from her as a person. It's derived from what she thinks a rapper needs to be.
I think, you know, it's funny. I definitely agree with that statement. Because when Iggy first came out, I was like, man, this chick's dope. Just because, not that she was a white rapper, because she was a female rapper, and I thought she was dope. And people who are longtime listeners, I've never been able just to fully get into female rap. And I guess it just might be like a male chauvinist quality that I have, and it's terrible. But I've never been able to fully commit myself to a female rapper until Nicki Minaj, to be honest with you.
Right.
Not so much newer Nicki. I mean, it's really not my style. I think she's still a good rapper, but it's not my style nowadays. But I definitely, she opened my eyes, and then Iggy came out, and then you have like Azalea Banks coming out, and I'm like, whoa,
oh, right, yeah.
All these rappers, all these female rappers are dope now, you know, maybe I'm finally getting it. But then I definitely think with the fancy song, you know, and it sounded like a DJ Mustard ripoff beat, and, you know, she was definitely putting on a show. She was definitely putting on a show.
For sure.
And I think, though, you know, she's gotten a lot of negative feedback, including, you know, even from her fellow white rappers, such as you and even such as Macklemore, kind of just like, Iggy, you just need to shut up. Just be quiet. You know what I mean? You don't need to sound off every time someone says something negative.
Well, that's true of everything in life. I mean, you know, people are going to have some. Yeah, see, that's why I think, and this is getting off topic a little bit, that social media is a terrible thing. But, I mean, she doesn't need to sound off on everything. I don't know. She's very much a product, you know, like she's very manufactured, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I can see why you say that. And she might have started off completely 100% authentic. But she's been produced way too much, I think, in my opinion, you know. And I think sometimes she does follow. And I think sometimes all of us kind of fall into it a little bit of we think this is what a rapper should be, not what do we think we should be as a rapper.
Sure, absolutely. There's no question.
But I do think she's fallen victim to that more so than some of her predecessors. I do think, you know, like when we talk about Nicki Minaj or Lil' Kim, I think they thought the way into the door was over sexualizing yourself, over accentuating your body and your sexual nature, and that's how you're going to get mainstream attention. And I think Nicki originally came in with that. I mean, her name's Nicki Minaj. You know, putting that out there, but I think eventually she kind of like honed into her own sound. And I think even though Nicki, you know, critics say that she's gone more pop, I think that she's gone more herself and the music that she does want to make. But then, you know, on the opposite side of the coin, you have an Iggy Azalea, who I do think is a little overproduced. But on that note, you know, I don't know if you listened to the new J. Cole album, did you?
I did.
And there's a song on there. I believe it's on Fire Squad is the name of the song.
Yes.
Where he says something like, you know, just like my, you know, blank Elvis did with rock and roll, Eminem, Justin Timberlake, the Macklemore. And he continues and says, you know, watch Iggy win a Grammy while I try to crack a smile, right? You know, something right, about white people are taking our sound, is what he said.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
How do you feel about those lyrics? I know a lot of people thought he was dissing all those artists. He said something otherwise.
He wasn't. He was definitely not dissing them. I mean, he was calling out a thing that's existed in music forever. That's appropriation, and that's a word. That's a buzzword now. I think, you know, since Macklemore came out, and I like Macklemore. I want to make that very clear that I think Macklemore is a very dope artist. And I listened to Macklemore before Thrift Shop, and that dude loves hip hop.
Yeah,
he's not exploiting anything. So, with that said, I do understand the frustration, though, and I know that the term appropriation is really popular because of white artists winning Grammys and stuff like that. But the thing is, you know, you and I, we're both white artists in a genre dominated by African American artists, correct?
Correct.
So, but this is the thing, though, like. When I was first introduced to hip-hop, it was through MTV. It was through mainstream radio. You see, like, this is not something that was ever a foreign thing to me in my lifetime, ever. Hip-hop has always been present in my... has always had a very strong presence in my lifetime. So it wasn't something that was ever foreign to me. So I feel as attached to hip-hop as any African-American my age, or any Asian kid my age, or any race my age. I mean, hip-hop is a part of... It's a fabric of the entire country, and people like you and I grew up with it. It's always been in our lives. So, I mean, for someone to take the assumption that it's something that I don't know or I'm not aware of or something that I don't understand, I just can't get with that. I mean, it's been there my entire life, and I understand it on the level that I understand it. And the music itself is expanding, and I think people with different perspectives coming in and telling their narratives is a tribute to that. And that's people like you and I and many other artists that have taken a different view on what has dominated hip-hop up to this point.
Yeah, no, and I definitely agree. And I think it's so global now. I mean, hip-hop's multi-billion dollar industry. And, you know, it's worldwide. And I think that it's unfair, in my personal opinion, to say that anyone can't appreciate the music more than another. I think we all have our own interpretation of it. And, you know, it's like art. You know, I mean, it's just like a painting. Everyone's going to interpret it differently, and no one person is right.
And exactly.
Yeah, I definitely think it's unfair.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, you think about all the different subgenres of hip-hop, and then you look at hip-hop in other parts of the world. Like, one of my artists ever is The Streets. It's a dude from the U.K., but his slang, his narratives, you know, the imagery that he uses is completely different from any American artist. Hip-hop is, but it's still hip-hop, you know what I'm saying?
Still the same thing, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's a medium that people can paint all types of different pictures within, and I think that's something that should be embraced, not looked down upon.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. And, you know, and we all heard, you know, The Blueprint, and we all heard, you know, Get Rich or Die Trying, you know, just newer albums that are considered classics. And we all took it our own way. And there's a reason why those albums sold millions and millions of copies worldwide. It's because everybody was able to connect to it in a different way, but still understand, you know, the message and being able to convey the message in their own words. And I think that's the point of art, and that's the point of hip hop. But what's funny about all of this, Kyle Hubbard, is that you decided to make a real, speaking of Jay-Z, you decided to do a real Jay-Z move not too long ago. And you retired from lyrical competition. You retired from hip hop, sort of officially / unofficially. And what was your idea behind that? Why did you decide to hang the mic up?
All right, well, first off, like, the term retired was definitely used way more than it should have been used. That was a very dramatic phrase to use. But let me tell you, you know how long I've been doing this.
Yes.
And I've been doing it a long time. It's been a humongous part of my identity for a long time. And you know that I came out with, in 2012, I came out with that album special, You're Not That Special, and it was tight. And I probably hit a career high at that point. And then after that, every song that I wrote was just a You're Not That Special. And this is like for a year and a half. Everything that I wrote, everything that I tried to create was just a lesser version of something that I had already done. And that was, and I know that I've said it on this show before, that if I wasn't advancing, that it was, you know, I was not interested in putting out music that was not as good as music I had previously released.
Yeah.
And that was the point that I was at for a long time. And I was just not content with the music that I was making. And, you know, I had really let go of the idea that hip hop was something that I could really make a career out of and live off of. And I let go of that notion, but it was still like, you know, you love to do it, so keep going. But then I stopped loving to do it. You know, I wasn't content with the work that I was doing. You know, I had been, you know, at the work in the office job for years now, and I don't know. I mean, there was just nothing left for me to talk about, and I don't know. You know, like, it came to a point where I didn't want to sacrifice what I had done before based solely on the fact that I wanted to keep going, you know?
Yeah, and I remember actually we had conversations in private about that, and you know, and I texted you recently, and it's what almost sparked some of this conversation today was, you know, I was listening to the You're Not That Special, that album, and in my car, you know, I have a 2004 Ford F-150 that I like to call Clifford the Big Red Truck. And it has a 6 CD changer. I don't have an auxiliary cable, so I can only listen to 6 albums, you know.
Oh, and, shit. Okay, I gotcha.
And your album, You're Not That Special, has not left my truck since I put it in there originally.
That is awesome, dude. That is the coolest shit I've ever heard in my life.
In 2012, all right, and it's 2015 now. And
it's almost 3 years old, dude. It's just getting under three years old.
It's getting there. You know, I don't know. That slot might be broken. It might not even come out if I wanted to eject it. You know what I mean?
But you would never want to eject it.
I would never. I know. I haven't in 3 years. Why would I now? I'm going for the record. But what's funny is, you know, I was listening to that album, and then I happened to have, you know, 2011, my band 2011's 20 Summers, our last project. It was in the next CD after that. And then you have a verse on that album as well, and I was listening to it.
Right.
And I remember, you know, you had this, like, lyric that kind of alluded to Johnny Cash. And
Yeah.
And I remember you telling me that when you recorded in the studio. So I texted you, and I was like, hey, man. Still, You're Not That Special. And I'll say it publicly on this show. And I said it on Twitter, but I know you don't have Twitter.
I don't.
You're Not That Special. 2012, You're Not That Special by Kyle Hubbard is top 5 in Houston, mainstream or underground, of all time, in my opinion. It might be 5th, but it's in the top 5. No, I'm kidding.
Well, fuck, dude. That's like the greatest compliment I've ever been given in my life.
But I mean it for real. And I thought it was so great. And I remember I'm like, dude, you just got to pick up the mic again, you know? And I said something like that in your text. And then you were like, don't tell anybody, but I'm going to the studio tomorrow.
Yeah,
I was
dude. Like,
you've got to be kidding me. And I started freaking out. I was marking out, to use a wrestling term.
And it led
us to this conversation today. You, sir, went to the studio and you recorded a record. Rip the Page, correct?
Correct.
With Truck North, and you went in there. Awesome beat. I don't know who produced it, but whoever they are,
Cass, of course.
DJ Cass, the Kyle Hubbard classic.
DJ Cass, always, dude.
What an incredible producer he is, and the track was awesome. You sent it to me. The world hasn't heard it yet, but you sent it to me, and I was like, man, this is Kyle Hubbard at its best. What was it, though, that really – I like to think that I'm the reason why you win the studio, but what was it
you
really –
You are the reason, Brad.
What was it really that tipped the scales, and you were like, I got to go in the studio. I got to record this record.
You know what? There's actually a two-part answer to this question.
Okay.
So that Truck North song I had been sitting on for a long time, you know, and I back in 2013, like, this is like when I was working on the You're Not That Special sequel, you know, like, it's like, okay, it's time to get the next album out. I'd reached out to Truck North, and Cass had produced the beat, and Truck recorded his part all the time back then. And I recorded the song in, like, June of 2013. It was actually the first song that I recorded. Or for the last song I recorded, I should say. So I recorded the song, and I just wasn't feeling it. And that was kind of the point where I was like, wow, It was like, I have all these great players with me right now. I have Truck North, an artist that I truly admire. I have DJ Kaz, my favorite producer ever, killing it. And I'm just letting these dudes down. And that was kind of the point where I walked away. But that haunted me. The fact that I did that has haunted me this entire time. And I always kind of knew that I would finish this song at some point. And I finally found my voice again and realized what I needed to say to make that song what it needed to be. And honestly, you know, I have to give credit to my girlfriend because...
Isn't that sweet?
It is sweet, but I got to be honest with you.
You're such a simp, Kyle Hubbard. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Continue.
No. Because this is the thing. This is the thing that every artist will tell you, and they may not say it in as mushy terms as I will say it, but having someone in your corner is one of the most essential things to being a successful artist. And having someone that believes in you is the most important thing. And having that really motivated me. So I was ready to do it, and I did it. And I'm fucking proud of that song. So, I'm really fucking proud of that song.
And I heard the record, you know, and I texted you as soon as I heard it. I was like, man, this is an incredible song. I love this song. It's one of my favorite Kyle Hubbard songs. What's your plan? I mean, are you going to go back to the studio? Are you going to record a full length? What is Kyle Hubbard thinking?
Brad, you know I have to give you something exclusive, right?
Yes.
Okay. I am definitely with no concrete timeline coming out with a new project.
Yes. In studio applause. Christmas come early. So you are going to, what are we thinking? Are we thinking EP? Are we thinking full length?
We're thinking EP right now, just for financial reasons and just because, you know, I don't write songs as often as I used to. So,
yeah,
you know, we're thinking EP right now, but we don't know. Things can happen, you know, but this is the thing, though. I don't want anybody to think that, like, I walked away and I'm just coming back with the same mindset. My mindset's completely different. I am doing it for the love, period. I'm doing this because I enjoy to do it. I don't feel like I owe anybody anything. I don't have any expectations except for to enjoy it and to have the people that I know like my music to enjoy it. Because I have enough people that like my shit to justify going to the studio and making this project. And that's the people I'm doing this for. I don't expect to get famous. And honestly, hip-hop will never be my number one priority again unless I get signed by Rhymesayers or something crazy. And that's it.
Well, and you're doing it. I think you're one of the few people in the industry. Even if you consider yourself in the industry anymore or not, but you're one of the few people in the industry who I think has always gone at it from a different perspective. And now I think this hiatus that you took, we're not calling it retirement, a hiatus that you took,
yeah,
may have rejuvenated your spirits. And because I think we all kind of get sick of the politics and the BS and the I can't say anything about this guy publicly, even if he sucks,
right,
I gotta tell him his record's awesome. I think you kind of got tired of that, like we all do. And being away also, because you're no longer in Houston.
I'm in Arkansas now.
You're in Arkansas, which I'm sure is a completely completely different experience.
It's not Houston.
It's definitely not Houston, and. I think that's rejuvenated your spirit in hip-hop. You've caught the Holy Ghost once again. And
I think I have, but it's a different breed of ghost this time.
I know, I definitely agree, and you can hear it in your tone.
Yeah, I'm not going to let any of this shit get to me. I'm here to do my art because it makes me happy, point fucking blank. If I put out an album and I'm like, hey, that shit was dope, I like to listen to it, people that I like think it's cool, dope, I'm fucking successful. That's all I want.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I think that's the way that everyone should start approaching it. And I know there are going to be people out there listening to this saying these two guys are idiots. You got to think about you got to think about your brand. What's best for
you? Yeah, you got to think about your branding. You got to think about your branding.
Yeah.
What are you sending? How many followers do you have?
How many retweets? What are your analytics like? Get your Googles up. You know, I took a meeting with a guy one time who wanted to manage me, and he was saying, like, well, what are your Googles like? And I'm like, what?
What are your Googles like?
And I was like, what? And he was like, you know, when someone searches your name on Google, how many Googles do you get? And I'm like,
how many Googles do you get?
Obviously, they should cut. They should put an age limit on the internet because you're not allowed to be on it anymore, old man.
Yeah, for real. If someone's asking you how many Googles you get, don't let them manage your artistic career in 2015.
No, definitely, definitely. He got put on the no call list. Kyle Hubbard, before I let you go, I want to get your opinion on this. I've decided for 2015, I'm not saving anybody's number unless I don't want to talk to them. If I don't want to talk to you, I'm going to save your number so that when you call me, I know not to answer. Is that not genius?
Wait. What are you going to do? Just memorize phone numbers? Who do you think you are?
I think I'm the phone number Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying? I'm the digital Jay-Z.
Perfect answer. So what you're telling me is you're just going to memorize numbers. You're not going to save them in your phone.
No, I'm only going to save someone's number in my phone if I don't want to talk to them. So
this is the most ballsy thing I've ever heard of in my life.
I think it's genius. I think this is the way of the future. And I am Brad Gilmore. I am a futurist. I am Kanye West. I'm Walt Disney. And you are Kyle Hubbard. I appreciate you for being on the show again. Rip the Page with Chuck North. Truck North is an amazing song. I can't wait for everyone to hear it. It's incredible. And you heard it. An EP is probably most likely coming. 99% sure. In the not too distant future, go ahead.
40. I'm definitely gonna have the EP out before I hit my 40s. I can tell you that much.
Okay, we would hope so. We would hope so. And if you haven't heard 2012, You're Not That Special. It was named one of the best hip hop albums to come out by the Houston Press in the year 2012. I say it's all time classic in Houston. See if you agree with me. Where can they find You're Not That Special, Kyle? Is it on iTunes?
You can find You're Not That Special at kylehubbard.bandcamp.com, and it should be on Spotify within the next couple of days.
That's amazing and incredible thing that you're doing for the people. Guys, do yourself a favor. Really, I'm seriously, as soon as you listen to the first song, you're going to want to listen to the rest, the other 11, I promise you. Kyle Hubbard, thank you so much. Facebook, go to Facebook. You can find Kyle Hubbard on there. KyleHubbard.bandcamp.com is the place to find his music. And he'll be giving you new music soon. I cannot wait. Thank you so much, Kyle.
Thank you.
Here it is right now, exclusively on the Brad Gilmore Show On Demand. We have it, Rip the Page, Kyle Hubbard featuring Truck North, produced by the one and the only, the Pimp Spectacular Man, DJ Kaz. Here it is right now, brother. Ooh, yeah.
See, I've been told there's not a lot to gain from honesty, and honestly, these days I see the truth in their philosophy, but truthfully, it's not for me. I feel I hold you all of me, the person that I wanna be, as well as who I gotta be. Got some kicks to feel, but most of them are born and torn. Intended to go find myself, but ain't get past the corner store. 20, you can say that you're a dreamer with a hint of pride. At 25, it means you want it more, and you just getting by. Now I'm 27, guess who still ain't famous yet? 2 years past the point I said I'd stop if I ain't made it yet. So I retired, that was obviously dumb as shit. Cause rappers at my level don't retire, they just fucking quit. Like some fucking bitch that won't amount to nothing great. Make a wish, then hold my breath, and then proceed to suffocate. You see the flame within, diminished by the minute. I don't wanna fight the fight, but all my ass already in it. I'm let it bring it. Breathe, breathe. Yeah, I'm right, then keep on right until I make it to the finish. Then I breathe. Baby, I've been praying you got to die, I put this pain down. But until it comes, I'll pick it up and breathe. Breathe, breathe. Yeah, I'm right, then keep on right until I'm back at the beginning. Then I breathe. Cause even on the day, I rip the page to start again. I sleepwalk past the castle doors without a key to get inside, and only wait to stare at all begins to keep on slipping by. Been down this road so many times, still rely on GPS. Cause moments I've been getting lost are moments I can't reinvest. In the past I used to clutch my nuts and beat my chest until the day the time I killed came back to life to eat my flesh. Now I'm infected, I'm a man without a message, and I'm desperate in my quest to go impress the unimpressive. I can't deny I lack a business mind to swim with sharks. I'm just trying to make it back to shore before I'm ripped apart. I need a different start to see how high that I can soar. Cause nowadays I'm talking less, but you can bet I'm writing more. I've been thinking I should take the time to find myself before I'm just a footnote in a story about somebody else. If that's my destiny, then tell that bitch she have to wait. The slaves of coincidence are in this bitch to master fate.
I let it breathe, breathe, breathe.
Yeah, I'm right, then keep on right until I make it to the finish. Then I breathe.
Baby, I've been praying all the day, I put this pain down.
But until it comes, I pick it up and breathe, breathe. I'm right and keep on right until I'm back at the beginning. Then I breathe.
Cause even on the day, and then I get to put this
I rip the paper to start again. I rip the paper to start again.
Real blood, real sweat, real tears up in this. I've been vulnerable as hell. I show my fears up in this. Van Gogh for my heart. I'm losing ear up in this. That's passion. That's risk. Swine diving off a cliff before I quit and become the working stiff that Sonny called the sucker. Not this a 9 to 5, cause I've been clocked in many a times to survive, and that's regardless of my pride. But the road less traveled is a real long stride. So if you stick with it, then you're gambling on the payoff, and that's a lifetime of never ever taking a day off. No holidays or funerals, cause only my death can interject what I am manifesting. Always going, not resting, not even on my laurels, cause that shit can spoil. So throughout all the toil, I still remain loyal. And when it get hot, then that pressure starts to boil. I'm on the front line, scam hands in the soil.
I let it breathe, breathe, breathe. Yeah, I'm right, then keep on right until I make it to the finish. Then I breathe.
Baby, I've been praying all the day, I put this pain down.
But until it comes, I pick it up and breathe, breathe. I'm right and keep on right until I'm back at the beginning. Then I breathe.
Cause even on the day, and then I get to put this
I rip the page to start again. I rip the page to start again.
What'd you think, people? Did you like my interview with Kyle Hubbard? I know you like my interview with Kyle Hubbard because it was awesome. All right, we talked about it all. White rappers, Iggy Azalea, all right, J. Cole, and his Jay-Z move of retiring from the game, but now he's back. I know y'all love the song. Rip the page. It'll be on iTunes and Spotify soon, people. So if you want the song, it might be there now. It might already be there now. So if you want the song, go to iTunes, search Kyle Hubbard. I'm sure it'll come up. Make sure you go check out his album, You're Not That Special. It was also an awesome, awesome thing. Right now, we're going to transition into my back-to-back interviews with Brian Keith and Ruthless Ryan Davidson. So y'all keep it locked to the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show. On demand. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's been a day here already. All right, you know. I know. We'll talk about it in a second. But I am continuing the podcast and interviews with some of the reality of wrestling stars going into the Final Heat big event. Final Heat, February the 21st. Harlem Heat reuniting to go against the Heavenly Bodies for the Tag Team Championships, but that's not the only championship contest going down that night. There's a couple more, and one of them is one of the biggest matches in reality wrestling history. Inside the steel cage for the Reality Wrestling Television Championship, we're going to be seeing Brian Keith go against the champion Ruthless Ryan Davidson. Right now, I have Brian Keith sitting right here in front of me. Brian, how you doing again today?
Doing great, man. Second time, you know, I'm out here.
Okay.
Same old.
Let's start off by saying I have a new recording device that I'm not exactly sure how it works.
It's recording now.
It is recording.
Yeah, it is. It's doing
And it's a new one. I don't know how it works.
Fancy, too.
And it is fancy and expensive, but you think it would be easier to work. But anyway, I'm sitting here with Brian. We get into like a nice 10-minute discussion, and then all of a sudden, I realize it hadn't been recording the whole time.
And a guy walked in, which stopped
the whole thing. Well, luckily, he stopped it.
That's true.
Really,
who realized it wasn't going? Who would have made it through the whole shit?
For the whole show, and then we're like, oh, man, there we go. We lost it. It happens sometimes. That's true. Man, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Just stepped out of training for a second.
Now I feel bad. I'm holding you up from training.
Yeah, no, it's okay, man. It's okay.
It's like all for promotion.
Said, that's true. Like you said, for one of the biggest matches there for Final Heat, it will be one of the biggest. Not the biggest, definitely. I'm looking forward to
Harlem Heat and the Bodies.
That's for sure. I'm looking forward to that
one. Would you say this is like the biggest match of your career?
This is the biggest match of my career, definitely. Mm-hmm. And as far as the television championship goes, I would think it's the biggest for the television championship.
Yeah, this is. We've had a tournament.
We've had a tournament,
but there's never been a cage match.
A cage match.
Because what we were saying before on the show, we realized that we weren't recording, is that there's been two other cage matches in reality wrestling history, both for the world title or the heavyweight title.
Yeah.
And this is the first time a television championship has been decided in such a match.
In a steel cage.
I mean, we've seen it in tournaments, we've seen it in ladder matches, but we've never seen it inside of a steel cage match.
That's true. That's true. I would. That ladder match is it's just as dangerous. I'll take that back then.
Ladder match is dangerous.
It's just as dangerous as a steel cage.
But it's not a cage.
That's true, though.
It's not a cage.
It's not a cage.
You just put a ladder in the ring. You got to put a cage around
that's,
the ring.
Yeah, that's true. And in any circumstance, you may have to climb out this cage.
You might have, so you're still climbing.
I'm.
That's ladder true. Or
it's
cage.
Worse.
See?
It's worse.
See?
Yeah, it's worse.
You don't have
it's
steps. Hotter. You have it's like, hotter. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Regardless. You're ready. Are you going to walk out the television champion?
I'm walking out the television champion. No doubt.
You're very confident in that.
I have to be. Now, like, I can't walk in and tell myself I'm going to lose.
Now, you've had a few matches with Ryan Davidson, both coming so close to winning
too,
that title.
Too close.
But Stevie Ray's always there.
Papa Doc.
Papa Doc.
Papa Doc. Always there, man. And just hanging in the balance, man. But, you know, that's how the consultant
He's consulting. But this time, steel cage wrapped around the ring. Stevie Ray can't get in. Ray's got a match that he's worried about.
Exactly.
He's not going to be there. He's probably not even going to be there.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm using. Is you can't be telling these things. That's my information.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully
my game plan.
Hopefully Stevie Ray didn't hear this.
Exactly,
podcast.
You know?
Hopefully he didn't hear it. But anyway, man, huge match. And yeah. We were talking about how you got started with reality wrestling. You just told the story, but it's such a great one. You got to tell it again. How'd you get your start? It was 8 years ago, right? 2004.
Set the scene. I'm at a PWA show.
Pro Wrestling Alliance.
Pro Wrestling Alliance was...
Previous name of reality wrestling.
That's true. Me and Javier Vega, we made it out to that show. PWA went to go watch this show. And mind you, we took the van.
Okay, so y'all are 14 years old, right?
14 years old, and we're driving from Greens Point in Houston to Pasadena.
Which, that's a pretty healthy drive.
That's a healthy drive for a 14-year-old.
How'd y'all know we were going?
He knew. He knows everything. He still knows everything.
He's like directional?
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
He's like a Swiss knife, bro. Like, he can do everything. He knows everything. He knows. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. But he knew at 14 how to get to Pasadena. Bam, we get to Pasadena and we watch the show. Show was phenomenal.
Do you remember any matches?
I remember D-Von being in a tables match.
Oh, that makes sense.
Or doing something with a table.
D-Von
because
Dugger.
I kept the piece of table.
Oh, cool.
I remember keeping a piece of the table, but I don't have it any longer.
But it was a spectacular
show. It was so spectacular that the table blew up and I caught a piece of the table.
Man,
so it must have been super spectacular. Yeah. But nonetheless, I caught the table. The show ended and come to find out the show was so amazing that we forgot that the light was on in the van.
Ugh.
Forgot the dreaded light was on.
The worst.
And drained the battery. So we make it back to the van, realizing that the battery's drained, and we immediately... We need help. 14 years old. We're stuck in Pasadena. Matter of fact, we took the van. And last thing we wanted to do was contact his parents. So we try to do this as quietly as we can. You know, ask somebody else, hey, if we get some jumper cables, then we don't have to contact his parents. Fine. We'll be home. Like nothing. Pretty much the only person at the time to ask by luck was Booker T. Doing autograph signing.
So here he is, 2004, one of the biggest stars in professional wrestling, Booker T. Is sitting there in the building signing autographs.
Across in the room,
Across the corridor. There's a lonely hallway. And so you think, there's no one else I can ask. Me and Javi are 14.
Stranded.
We stole a van.
Yeah.
Stranded.
Family van,
but it was stolen nonetheless. And so you're asking Booker T. So you wait for the line to die down, right?
Nah, it was done. They were done. We were waiting for that to die down. Of course, like I mentioned before, I heard the dreaded horror stories about wrestlers flipping out on people for being, you know, rude or whatever. So I waited. We waited towards the end. He finished signing autographs. And then I go up to him. First I was reluctant. Just didn't even want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, I was afraid what he was going to say. Same with Javi, too. You know, he didn't know what he was going to say. And something in me just said, you know what? Just do it. You know, go for it. Best thing he could do is say no or yes. So we go. And I ask him, you know, I'm like, hey, we're stranded. Van's not working at the moment. Would you mind if we used some jumper cables or something like that? So, you know, we'll get the van started again. And, you know, we can make it out here. 14 years old, we made it out here for your show, and you know, we just wondering if you could help us out. And
Did he question it?
That's the ridiculous part about it.
He was like, oh, 14? Yeah, you probably have a driver's
license. You're good enough to drive the
best. Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of Javi.
Yeah, there you go.
So, we leave, and, we ask him, and he didn't even question it. Don't even remember him even batting an eye, really. He was just like, you know, hey, we'll get you some jump cables, help you out. He got Tom, the camera guy at the time, to help us out, got the cables. And we tried to jump in, and it still didn't work, man. So, it was freaking ridiculous. Pouring raining outside, worst situation possible.
Yeah.
Stolen family van, raining.
Dead.
Jumper battery.
Cables don't work.
Jumper cables ain't working.
How am I getting home?
And Booker T goes, you could wait inside.
Oh.
And this is like kid in the candy store right here. Yeah. Man. I'm like, you mean to tell me I can wait around the wrestlers? What? So bam, I'm going inside. He offers us a side. We're going inside. And we're waiting. You know, Devon's there. I want to say, not Rosie, but maybe Umaga was there or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody was there who was Samoan.
Yeah. I feel like. A Samoan wrestler
was there.
Was at the show.
And I remember just hanging around them, man, and it was an amazing feeling. And ever since then, man, I just made up my mind, you know, this is what I have to do for the rest of my life. And I remember even telling Booker that, you know, one day we're going to come back and we're going to wrestle for you. And it's weird, man. Like, it still sends, like, shivers down my spine, bro. Like, every time I get in the ring or I prep myself for a match, or the fact that I just realize I'm here, bro, is like, within 10 years, like, not even 10 years, I made that dream happen. And not me. I'm going to take that back. Not I. God made that dream happen for me. Because if it wasn't for him, none of this would be possible. But I told him, man, you know, we're going to come back and we're going to wrestle for you. And me and Javi did just that. You know, we came back. And no less than 10 years later, here I am in the same building where I told him, hey, I'm going to come back and one day wrestle for you. I'm in a steel cage match for the television championship for his show. And that is, like, mind-blowing for me.
It's incredible.
It's ridiculous.
It's incredible. But, like, so it's the biggest match of your career.
Ever.
Are you hesitant getting inside of a cage?
I mean, like, when I wasn't in reality or wrestling, I was in a cage match before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, but this is on a much bigger scale because there's a lot more at stake. The company, it means a lot more to me at this point, and
it's arguably the biggest show that we've done since being Reality of Wrestling.
Exactly.
I feel like it rivals Summer of Champions.
I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Booker and Steve Ray are teaming back up, I feel like that's what tips it over the scale, is the fact that it's gonna be eyes on the show, man. And I'm not gonna disappoint.
You know, it's crazy that, I mean, I've never seen, since I've been here, Booker wrestle, right?
Me either.
Because I got here, like, I think, like, 3 months after his Mania 28 match, which is, like, the last time I think he wrestled since then. So I'm like, whoa. And then I find out the other day, at our last show, and I'm talking to Stevie Ray, he hasn't wrestled since 2002.
Yeah, see? So everybody's waiting.
This is a momentous occasion.
Yeah, like, people.
How excited are you to see Harlem Heat reunite? For one night only.
Too exciting, man. Like, I can't even muster up the words to describe it. Because, like, actually just recently, I was watching some tag footage of them in Japan. Like, I'm a big fan of Japanese wrestling. Yeah. So, like, it surprised me just seeing them on there. They were wrestling, I want to say Hashimoto. A guy named Shinya Hashimoto, I think it was. But it was in a tag match. And just then, you know, like, that's just some of the footage that I saw from the past week. And I was like, we get to see this.
Yeah.
Once again, you know, like, I can't wait. Words can't describe.
It's going to be incredible. Well, Brian Keith, thank you for sitting with me. Thank you for having to do it twice. Thank you,
appreciate it. Hey, it's good.
We're gonna do it again.
So
nice you had to do it twice. Brian Keith, where can they find you on, like, social media and stuff?
Facebook, Brian Keith. Instagram. Just check on the Reality of Wrestling page. I don't know my handle. I think it's TYGB Keith.
Yeah.
I think. But I'm not sure anymore. And same for Twitter.
Same for Twitter.
Yeah, same.
So check it out. Brian Keith, he will be wrestling February the 21st in the Pasadena Convention Center inside the steel cage for the Reality Wrestling Television Championship. Doesn't get really much bigger than that.
Don't get bigger than that.
Doggy! Thanks, Brian.
That, Brad. Censor that.
Okay, now it's recording. There we go.
Okay, awesome.
All right, so, ready?
Do you have, like, a list of questions for me?
No. Free form.
Only important people. Like, you have, like, a whole list. Like, hey, so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. That's okay.
Do you know, like, the first time, like, I interviewed, like, Well, anybody, like, just, I didn't have any, I had no notes.
Because I feel special. I'm in an empty room in front of the bathrooms here at the gym. And, I mean, this thing looks like a breathalyzer.
It does look like a breathalyzer.
I mean, I wish I was drinking alcohol right now, but that's okay. Anyway, a Red Bull will suffice. What's going on?
Red Bull. How you doing, man? How's everything
Bradley,
going?
Bradley, I'm doing awesome. How are you?
You know, before,
it's good to be me.
It is good to be. It's good to be me as well. I mean,
so
look,
I've heard.
Look at my hair. So, before we even start really just talking interviewing style, I just had to know before Kiefer the Timekeeper interrupts.
That's great. Kiefer, come in here with his Johnny Depp, flawless haircut. Nice Puma jacket.
I'll take that as a compliment.
You nice Puma jacket.
Run for that competition. I'm trying to get some gains here on this podcast. Close that door if you're going to take a shit. Anyways.
Let's clear something up, all right? All right. Because you see it at the beginning of every reality wrestling show. There's a clip in there where Ruthless Ryan Davidson has to shove Brad Gilmore,
Bradley, I didn't have to shove you. I really didn't. And I didn't really feel like shoving you. It's just your aura is just so, like,
unshovable.
God, you're so, I just want to punch you in the face, Bradley. but you're such a nice guy. And it's the face. It's not even the hair. Most people are like, oh, man, I did that guy's hair. I love the hair, actually.
I think it's
very suave GQ of you. It's just that. You know, you're a nice guy, you dress real well, you have a hot girlfriend, why would I not want to punch you in the face?
You didn't punch me.
I didn't.
The punch would have been devastating.
That's okay, I just want to let you know, great men have a great center of balance, and obviously your balance is just piss poor.
Well, anyway, hey, okay, now that we've got that
I don't know where I was going from.
There's no beef. We got to clear
there's
it up.
No beef.
We have no beef.
All Whole Foods Market, you know, cage-free.
It's all cage-free.
No GMOs, bro.
Range-free chicken, you know what I'm saying? But what's funny is you know, like, I really do get asked about that by everybody. Is like, did he like, because, you know, I don't, some people still aren't smarting up to everything. Yeah. So, like, I still keep it. I'm like, I don't know. He just decided to push me, you know. But, like, people think that you literally didn't like me for some reason. And I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm the most likable guy in the world, and I have no ego or anything.
Yeah, I can't tell at all.
Exactly.
In fact, I can't stop staring at your hair from the first moment that you said.
But in all seriousness, I know we're joking a lot, but, like, you're, like, literally maybe my favorite person on this roster.
Wow.
As a person.
That, buddy, I'm going to start blushing. Are you serious? You're not
saying
this
because
of the podcast?
No.
You know. Are you sure?
Well, actually, I told Brian Keith the same thing. No, I'm joking.
I'm pretty sure. Brian Keith is a very likable
human being. Brian Keith is very likable.
He very, very is. He's very, very
but
cool.
Seriously,
it's
like,
just,
but
it's just sad that I'm going to beat his ass on, you know.
The February 21st.
February 21st, yeah.
But, like, seriously, the first time, like, I walked in here and started getting to know everybody, like, you were always, like, the most welcoming guy.
Well, it's just kind of like, why would you want to, you know, sit there and just, like, be like a bully or try and act all tough or anything? There's a bunch of tough guys in the business, you know,
yeah,
everything like that. But I was never that type of guy to where I had to, like, prove to be tough, you know. Actions speak louder than words. And, I mean, I don't consider myself tougher than, you know, anybody else. I just lace up my boots and just try to do the best I can in the ring. And if that makes me seem a little, quote unquote, tougher than most, and so be it, man. I'm just enjoying what I love.
You do, but you do seem like, you seem like the veteran of the roster.
No, I am.
You are the veteran
of the roster.
I mean, you're like, to me, like, if
my vet card is laminated and everything.
I believe you.
It's awesome.
I believe you.
It's awesome.
But, like, if you know, I'd equate you to, like, somebody, like, you know, like in WWE or whatever, you're like the hardcore Holly or, like, you know, the Taker kind of guy.
Well, I know.
I dropped Taker.
Those are two big shoes to fill, especially Bob Holly. You know, getting to meet him and be around him, dude, that guy, like, man, like, it was crazy. Like, when he first came here, we even, like, talked to him about it. We did this show in Louisiana. We were just like, yo, man, you know, normally sound like a bunch of marks, but, like, you know, we kind of thought that you were going to, like, come in here and be, like, all hard-nosed and, like, don't piss him off or he'll punch you in the face or, you know, he's going to take the blood of your firstborn if you say something wrong. You know, like, we didn't know, but he's the nicest guy on the face of the planet. Like, he is the coolest guy and still got the best damn dropkick I've ever seen in wrestling.
Most awesome dropkick.
I know Book would be pissed off to hear that, but, I mean,
well, I don't think Book listens to my show, so you don't have to worry about it. But it was funny because I had to go pick Bob Holly up from the airport or from his hotel.
Really?
So the whole time, you know, you've heard nothing but, like, crazy stories about everybody, but Bob Holly especially. So I'm like, kind of, I'm not nervous, but I'm like, man, this is going to be an awkward ride where he's probably going to be silent. Right. He gets in, hey, guy, hey, what you, oh, hey, Brad, oh, hey, how you doing, da-da-da. And I'm like, sorry, because I was late, too. So I'm like, he's going to kill it. I was like 5-10 minutes late. But I had, like, because my car broke down, so I was telling him about my truck broke down. He was like, geez. He's like, well, what's wrong? And then I told him the thing, and he was like,
well, you need to fix it? Pop the hood, bro.
No. So he literally said, he's like, you got some tools? We can stop by your house and fix it before we go to the show. Said that.
Really?
And I'm like, why are you the nicest person to ever walk the face of the earth?
Oh,
like,
my God.
He offered. And I'm like, and then I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, the spark plug Holly thing was a shoot. Like,
dude, that's bad.
He knew what he was talking about, though. He knew what he was talking about.
You're like, oh, you want to go over in your house? Be like, oh, that's great. Bob Holly's going to murder me in my front yard. I mean, not that he would. I'm just saying, like, he's always built as this tough guy.
I know.
He has such a reputation because he's one of the toughest guys in this business. And to hear that stuff, wow, man. I'm going to be like,
so awesome.
I'd be like, yo, man, can you check for the oil in my Mustang real quick? Just see if I'm court low.
Oh, it was kind of like kicking a little bit. I didn't know.
But, you know, it's kind of, it's funny how you say, like, you know, we get this perception of different people in the wrestling business and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy that, you know, a lot of guys or girls that come off as a certain for characters and stuff like that, you would think it would sound so simple, like, oh, that, you know, if you're inside the business, like, oh, that really can't be how they really are in real life and this and that. Sometimes it is, because some people buy into their own, I guess, you know, character, ego or whatever. But, you know, be honest with you, like, coming from that, it was just when a couple of guys that I first met here when I first ever came to books, just by them seeing me wrestle, they never met me or anything prior to that. But they literally thought I was an asshole. Like, completely thought I was the biggest jerk. And they just, I'm like, oh, hey, I'm Ryan. Nice to meet you, blah, blah. And they're like, yo, man, when I first saw you, I thought you were a dick. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, just the way you were in the ring. I'm like, I'm playing a character, Mark. Like, wow. But people, people would really believe that, man. And I mean, you know, I guess I'm doing my job right. I mean, you know,
I mean, it's crazy, though, because, like, you are, I think, you know, I mean, I don't care. I think you're, like, the best heel on the roster, hands down.
Thank you.
You know, I think it's you and Abel, but Abel's so polarizing that he's not even.
Abel's just funny. You can't hate a funny
guy. You can't hate a funny guy. That's what I'm saying.
You can't hate him.
That's what I'm saying.
His promos are so
funny. And I'm an Abelitarian, so it's like, I can't. I'm a registered voter. I'm a registered voter.
God. Okay.
So I can't hate the guy. You know what I'm saying? We see eye to eye. You know what I'm saying? I voted for Abel Care. But you are, so like, I wanted, but like when I met you, you were just such a nice guy, and you were always like, you know, real, and you just were real nice and real welcoming. Like, because you know, you never know when you're first coming into a locker room, like, how people are going to react to you.
And that's one thing I'll never forget. Like, when I first came and like kind of like broke into. You know, business, everything like that. It's like, it's an intimidating, like, atmosphere, man. Or, like, even when I played, like, football, man, like, you go into, like, you know, my first day at West Texas A&M, you know, I didn't know all these guys that I'd be playing football with, you know, and everything. So I know what it's like to be in a very uncomfortable situation, to kind of go way out of your comfort zone to try and go after something that you totally love, you know. And, I mean, instead of just sitting there and just trying to seem, like, all tough or whatever, why don't you just be welcoming? It doesn't. You know, and books said it before, and, you know, it's ironic because my mom used to tell me the same thing growing up. Like, it costs nothing to be nice, but then you get all the benefits and the rewards from it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't, you know, it doesn't cost me anything to say, hey, man, how you doing? How's your day? What's going on? Welcome, man. Come on in, da-da-da-da. And really, people's demeanor, they'll just change right in front of your eyes, man. And it's just like, it's not just about feeling good, but it's just being respectful for somebody else, you know? And I just, I don't know, man. I always took that with a lot of weight, you know? Just always, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated.
But, like, but my question is, like, how does a guy, though, who has that foundation, who's so nice to, like, literally, you're so nice to people, you know, in general. I mean, maybe some of the boys won't agree in the ring.
Yeah, but, whatever. They're assholes anyway.
but like, how do you tap in to a different side of you towards, like, this heel? Because, let me tell you this. When you walk through that curtain, I remember, like, when I was doing ring announcing, and you would walk through that curtain, and I'd see you coming through. I'm like, this guy's a badass MF, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, this guy, see, I tried to censor myself. See, I was like, this guy's just, he just looks mean, and you tear the sign up, you know, you do the wipe your ass with your towel, throw it at me, you know what I'm saying, trying to punk me out.
It's probably because my ass really was sweaty. I was trying to take care of business. Really, to be honest with you, man, some things, it just, I guess it's natural or whatever, because I really don't see myself a mean person, but I guess kind of getting into character, into the mode of things, believe it or not, I got bullied a lot when I was growing up. Like, I just got bullied a lot. I wasn't really the guy that got, like, a lot of the chicks and just kind of got effed over by a bunch of people a couple times. And I kind of just take all those bad experiences and things like that and all those insecurities that I had back then and ball them up to where, like, the guy that I hated, the person that I hated, because I was on the receiving end, like, I'm going to be that guy and I'm going to use that towards wrestling and use that as, like, you know, just to kind of see, like, how big of a jerk could I be in the ring. And plus, I've always just really always been, like, always admired, like, you know, just big, huge, like, guys that would just, like, just brutal. Just absolutely brutal. Like, I always, like, you know, like the Fit Finleys and William
Brothers
and, like, just old school, like, Bruiser Brodies, you know.
I was about to say Brody, it seems like you're like,
guys like that were just
butter.
Like, man, I just, you know, really, like, that was the only type of wrestling that I'd really get into. It was just, like, the real mean streak, you know. And it sounds so cliche, but, I mean, it's true, you know. And just really, you know, really, really admired all that, man. And just, I mean, I kind of just tap into it, man. Because, like I said, I've had a lot of bad experiences in my life, you know. Me and my father have a great relationship now and everything, but he wasn't in my life a lot. It really hurt me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and all that other stuff. I mean, I'm not trying to put a down moment on this podcast. Hey, you gave me an honest question. I was just asking, but, you know, and all this other stuff. And I dealt with a lot of crap growing up as a kid, but, you know, everything makes you stronger and whatnot. But I just kind of tap into that just to, you know, how I've seen the best in people, and I've also seen the worst. I think everybody has, but, you know, I just try and take, like, well, how can I connect with somebody to where they'd be like, oh man, that remind me of, like, a guy in high school that would shove me against the locker, or, oh, that remind me of the guy that, you know, cut in line, you know, somewhere at the movie theater or something like that. Like, I wanted like Ryan Davidson, like Ruthless Ryan Davidson, to be that guy.
Yeah,
you know, I want to be a reminder of, like, oh man, da 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 da. And that's what I try and do every night. It's just, you know, I want to be somewhat of a reminder of, like, you know,
that guy you hated.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, for some reason, I just love people booing me. Like, it's cool for, like, somebody to be like, yay, but it's so much more satisfying to have somebody just be red in the face where, you know, they come in and they think, oh, it's a show, I'll just have fun, this and that. But if they just get really pissed off by me just looking at them, oh, it's the most satisfying thing on the planet.
You know, it's funny.
It's awesome, dude.
It's funny because, like, I remember, because, you know, when I first came here, I was the ring announcer, right? I'm supposed to get no love. No one's supposed to even notice me, right?
Right.
And I used to walk out there and get these just choruses and choruses of boos.
Yeah.
Just walking out there. Well, and I was like,
well, everybody hates a winner, Brad.
That's right.
You see what I mean? That's about as nice as I'll go. Everybody hates a winner.
But then after a while, you kind of are like, at least they're reacting. So is that kind of like your thing?
At least they're paying attention. Absolutely.
At least you don't come out to nothing.
To me, I was never the guy. I was always like a team player, like even in sports and everything. So I never considered myself like a, you know, like a individual type thing. I always thought of it like a team effort type of deal. You know what I mean? So when you get like reactions like that or whatever, to me it's like, you know what? I'm playing my part because at least they're paying attention. You know what I mean? I was never like, oh, it needs to be about me. They need to cheer. Or, you know, I need to look cool, this and that. It's like, man, my job is to go out there and get booed. So,
God, do whatever it takes.
Oh, my God.
If it takes pushing down the most great-looking commentator
in
the world.
I swear to God.
Next to Matt Topolsky.
I would pie-face a five-year-old if I can get away with it. I totally would. I would pie-face a five-year-old, pop the balloon, spit in their popcorn. I don't care. I'd do it. I would totally do it. You know. And that's funny. Have you heard about the story with Triple H? He broke character.
Yeah. And he went.
That's pro, man. But, I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you feel that?
Well, I look at it like two ways. Is it's like, as the show, as a character, worst thing you could possibly do,
right?
Because you know, if Robert Downey Jr. is in the middle of a movie and he's a bad guy, he makes someone in the movie theater cry. I know he can't do it, but is he going to turn to the camera and be like, "Hey, it's all right. I'm just acting."
Yeah,
you know,
past the third wall. Yeah. Like, hey, it's a movie. Guys. Yeah, it's relax.
But at the same time, Triple H is a corporate guy.
I'm with you on that. Just on this whole fact, because I thought, you know, in a certain position and everything and all that stuff. Happy birthday.
While we're recording this podcast, make sure you use the hashtag blame Cindy.
Blame Cindy for ruining my podcast, even though it's her birthday yesterday.
Oh my God, I'm sorry.
Happy birthday! That's awesome. Hope you get that right on. You can talk more on the breathalyzer if you want to.
Oh, so many jokes on that one.
Hashtag blame Cindy. I'm just kidding. I know. Love you too.
Okay, but let's get to the meat and potatoes of this conversation.
Meat and potatoes.
Right. Yeah, I said it.
It's delicious.
It's delicious.
Right on.
February the 21st is arguably the biggest event in reality of wrestling history. I mean, Summer of Champions was last year, but I really think this is going to top Summer of Champions.
I do too.
You know,
I do too.
The main event, Harlem Heat reuniting. I mean, like, literally while we're sitting here doing this podcast, Harlem Heat is in the room next to us right now.
Yes, they are.
They're sitting
it's pretty awesome.
And just talking.
I couldn't agree with you more, man. It's just one of those things, like, you know, Summer of Champions was great. It was a good milestone night for the company. But, I mean, it's just thing is that, you know, you're never going to get ahead in life. You just keep dwelling on the past and, you know, and everything like that. And I believe that, you know, I totally agree with you. I mean, the final Heat is definitely going to be not, you know, the only thing that's going to be final, possibly, could be the Harlem Heat, you know, reunion, what have you? I'm trying to find the word to say that.
Or could it be the final night that Ruthless Brian Davison is the television champion?
Nah, we were having a good standing here this entire time talking to your breathalyzer, okay? And now you want to go ahead and tip over and okay, back to Brian Keith. He's a good dude, man. He's a good guy, and I mean, he's so talented. Like one of the guys that like came up, man. That like I wish a majority of students were like him and Inferno Tiger. You know what I mean? Just these guys that like they didn't have an ego. They understood the business. They paid their dues. They still pay their dues, and they're so respectable. And like to me, like I'm glad I'm in the ring with Brian Keith. You know what I mean? Because he's such a standout guy, and he's a good worker, and he's just a phenomenal person. But the only thing is that it's gonna be sad when I just slam his ass into the mat as hard as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Let alone we're in a cage.
Yeah.
Which is like my forte, because I've never lost a cage match. So
and you've been in all kinds of extreme situations.
Quote unquote work. I've never lost a kitchen. I'm just kidding. I've lost a few. Anyways, I kind of take a little bit of no pun intended, a little bit of pride if he's listening. Anyways, on you know having some of the most hardcore, I guess, matches in reality wrestling. I've never considered like a hardcore guy. But to me, like I kind of look at it as that, you know, you put me in this image on this pedestal to kind of have these different matches. I'm honored by that, man. And it's
you've been in like what, I quit matches, extreme rules, ladder.
Last man standing, ladder, you know, best of five, technically nine matches. You know what I mean? And all kinds of stuff, man. But like February 21st, man, like I step in a cage with Brian Keith. And I know magic will happen, as the old cliche goes. And, you know, if it's my last night to be television champion, and if it's his night, then okay, cool. But he's going to have to put a lot of work in to try and beat me.
And, you know, and talking about Harlem Heat, though, and I can't believe this almost slipped my mind. Talking about Harlem Heat, you're the television champion, mm-hmm. but you're also a member of Stevie Ray Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
Stevie Ray is your manager.
He's the man.
And how has that been, though, like working with Stevie Ray? I mean, he's been in around, you know, a little more than a year here in reality wrestling, and, you know, y'all got matched up pretty quickly.
Well, one thing is with Stevie, man, is that you know, what's great having him is that not only is he just Stevie Ray, to where he's been there, done everything that you possibly do, and just been at the top of the mountains with like WCW and elsewhere and pro wrestling, but it's just the fact that it always helps that you have a guy that knows what he's talking about, you know, that has such a quote-unquote expert tutelage on like through the wrestling business, can see things outside of the ring that you wouldn't be able to see. And, you know, every single time I get in the back, you know, I always ask him, hey, man, what would you like? You know, what can I work on this and that? And it's been like a personal, like, coach literally every match. So it's like I can't get any worse. I'm getting better and better each time I step in. And he's played a big part of that. And don't get me wrong, it's a blessing to have Booker T here all the time. You got a Hall of Famer giving you a limited amount of knowledge each and every time we come to school. But, like, man, having Stevie around is awesome. Cool dude. Really easy to talk to, man. And, I mean, just like – I still have buddies that I've watched wrestling with back in the day. They mark out like, holy shit, man, yes, Stevie Ray walks out, bro. We watched Nitro with that guy. Da, 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 da. And it's true, man. There's so many nights that buddies come over to the house or whatever. We'd flip back from Nitro and Raw. It was like, we watched Book, we watched Stevie and everything like that. And then years later, like, I'm in the same locker room with these guys. It's crazy.
And now you're the second biggest match of the final Heat night.
I'm the biggest match of the night.
Okay,
whatever. I'll let Book have that one.
Let Book have some.
Well, I'll let him have it. Whatever. We'll talk about it.
He ain't had much of a career, so you gotta have something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. Maybe one day. I'll be like, good luck, kid. I don't know. But, nah, man, it's going to be fun. February 21st will be great. And, you know, another good thing about it is that, you know, you got the Harlem Heat match. You got my match, you know, in the cage. You have all these other different matches. But the fact that, like, we're coming back to our old stomping grounds.
Yeah, Pasadena Convention Center.
Bro, when I first came to PWA, it was the biggest intimidating environment that I've ever been in pro wrestling. Because not only was it just like, you know, you're surrounded by all these guys that were like the top town around Texas and whatnot, and it was Booker T, but like, dude, like the crowd, like, man, there's no gray area. They either love you or they hate you. And the whole place was packed, you know, and it's a big, big venue, man.
Yeah.
And it was a very intimidating place to be, man. And like going back to that, it's like, it's basically going back home.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be awesome. I'm so glad that we're going back there, man, just for this show. Even if it's for one show and we don't go back there for a while or ever, it's still going to be worth it, man. And it's going to be just be nostalgia because we had so many great moments in there. You know, my first match was against Gustavo in the main event. That was my first show there, you know, and I'm like, dude, that was an honor. You know what I mean? So it's going to be cool, man. It'll be a good time.
So February 21st, Ruthless Ryan Davidson defends his television championship against the number one contender, Brian Keith, inside the steel cage. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's going to walk out the champ.
I'm going to walk out. Shut up, Bradley.
Just stop.
Whatever.
But I've really enjoyed this. We're gonna have
you
to.
You know enjoy more if your girlfriend was here. Because she totally enjoyed it. Yeah, I hope you let her. Could you send her a text message?
I will. You know, I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll let her know Ryan Davidson's
don't
here.
Don't lie to me though.
I won't.
Seriously, text her. Pull out your phone right now.
Okay. I will. You know.
Okay.
Let me stop this recording.
Okay.
But I do want you to be back on the show soon so we can talk like in long form, not just like
long
20
form?
Minutes.
Oh yeah, because I'm only worth 15 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
It's okay. Whatever. All right. Get off on your.
All right. Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Bradley.
Thank y'all. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this week's Brad Gilmore Show, episode 91. I hope you enjoyed Kyle Hubbard, Brian Keith, and Ruthless Ryan Davidson. Make sure you buy your tickets February the 21st for the final heat. It's not only going to see that amazing steel cage match between those two gentlemen, but also Harlem Heat for one night is reuniting Stevie Ray, WWE Hall of Famer, six-time World Heavyweight Champion Booker T will be lacing up their boots one more time to go for the Reality of Wrestling Tag Team Championships against the Heavenly Bodies from Pro Wrestling Syndicate. It will be a night to remember, and you better be there at the Pasadena Convention Center. Go to realityofwrestling.com to get your tickets. They're almost sold out, so you don't want to get shut out because it's going to be on like a steaming pot of neck bone dog. So make sure y'all tune into the Brad Gilmore Show on demand next week. We're going to be back with some awesome guests. Stay tuned to me on Twitter at Brad Gilmore and the show at Brad Gilmore Show. Both those tags the same for Instagram. Go follow us there. And we're going to be having a big announcement about another thing that's going to be happening in the Brad Gilmore Show world. We're going to be talking about that next week. So stay tuned to the one and the only, the greatest podcast of all time, the Brad Gilmore Show on demand.
Man, I said I got the pod going up on a Tuesday. What your girl right now, she choose. Hey, forgot to say, thanks for tuning in to the Tuesday premiere of the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. We'll be here. Oops, that's my phone. Now it's on silent. We'll be here every Tuesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and YouTube, and BradGilmoreShow.com, and BradGilmore.podbean.com. So many ways you can get the show. We just thank you for doing so. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, all that great stuff so you get the show automatically in whatever podcast feed you have for free every single Tuesday. Thanks. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Thanks for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes and add us to your playlist on Stitcher Radio. Come tune in next week.
Oh, Brian, what have you done now?